The very technical definition of a digital nomad is someone who doesn't have a home base and drifts around working online. But I believe it's now become an umbrella term, especially after the pandemic. And I saw these people online on Instagram living out of vans, like you mentioned. And these people called digital nomads, I had never heard of it. And I was obsessed with the idea. I would come home from work and I would disappear into this world. I would watch documentaries on travel and YouTube channels and listen to podcasts. It became this whole portal into this other way of life. And I thought, well, I'm sure I could find remote work. I could freelance. I feel like if other people could figure it out, I could probably figure it out. And I found freelancing work online. And then I got rid of my apartment and left and bought a one-way ticket to Mexico. And I had absolutely no plan of where I would go or how long I would be there or what. I had no plan.
Welcome to Unleash Thyself, a podcast where we journey into the depths of personal transformation, spirituality, and growth. I am your host, Constantine Morun, and today we're talking with Kayla Erig, who's known for her amazing journey and work as a digital nomad. Kayla's story has been shared in big places like the BBC and Forbes, and she's here to share her experiences with us too. In 2017, Kayla decided to live differently. She left her regular job, started working online, and began traveling the world. She writes for well-known companies and helps others live the life they dream about through her book, How to Be a Digital Nomad. We're going to chat about what it's like to be a digital nomad, how Kayla made the big leap to work and travel, and the ups and downs of this lifestyle. Now, she'll also share tips from her book and her favorite travel stories. Whether you're thinking about becoming a digital nomad or just love hearing travel stories, Kayla's got lots of insights to share. But before we start, I have a small favor to ask. Please subscribe, like, and share your thoughts in the comments or reviews below. Your engagement helps us continue to bring these transformative conversations and stories to light. Let's begin. Hello, beautiful souls. I'm here today with Kayla Erig. It's such a pleasure to have you here, Kayla. I cannot wait to have a beautiful conversation with you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so let's jump right in. You are what's called a digital nomad. And you know what? That's something that I've heard about in the past. I've actually had someone on the show that was also a nomad, but more living a life out of a van, traveling across Canada and North America. And I'm curious to see, A, what do you define as a digital nomad yourself? And then later on, we'll dive into why you're even doing that.
And the very technical definition of a digital nomad is someone who doesn't have a home base and drifts around working online. But I believe it's now become an umbrella term, especially after the pandemic, where so many people were now, they have like the term flex work didn't really exist before the pandemic. Remote work goes way back to the 80s, but it didn't gain that kind of like pop culture cachet until the pandemic. So now I feel like that term encompasses anyone who works remotely and sometimes works from somewhere else. And it doesn't have to be a lifestyle. You don't need to give up all your stuff. You just have to kind of take advantage and use remote work as a vehicle to travel more.
Yeah, I love that. And you were born in the United States, right? And now travel across the world.
Yes, I'm from Pennsylvania in the U.S., and I had been living in Chicago before I left and went traveling in 2017, and I didn't really know how long I would be traveling for, but I ended up, I've been abroad most of the time ever since, and actually got immigrated in the Netherlands and became a Dutch citizen, and it's been a whole it's been a whole adventure.
I can imagine. So we'll dive into some of that and some of the lessons and gifts you've been given along the way. So let's go back to like 2017, right? You made this decision to start being a nomad, or at least to travel. And I know that most people love to travel. Most people say, you know what, if I could, I would travel as much as possible. And yet you're here living the dream, getting to work remotely and travel wherever you want. How did you stumble upon it? How did you make the decision? Because I'd imagine it's not easy.
I was happy in life, but I was not passionate about what I was doing. I had been working at an architecture firm in Chicago doing marketing, and I was new at this role. And somebody asked me once, what do you love most about architecture? And in the moment, I was just like way too honest. I was 23. And I said, I don't even like architecture. That was the truth. I didn't even really like it. But I was doing it all day. I never saw my family. I had very few friends. Like, my job was really all I had kind of happening in my life. And then I went to this panel discussion in Chicago. There's this event that happens every year called the Chicago Ideas Week. And somebody gave me a free ticket. And I was like, well, I should go. I never do anything after work. I should go to this. And I sat there and there was this panel discussion. And I don't remember who any of the panelists were or what they were talking about. But they were all so passionate about, like, someone was talking about, like, being an athlete and some weird documentary series that they filmed. And I just thought, wow, I have none of this for how I'm spending my time. And that's quite sad. You know, there's that Annie Dillard quote, how we spend our time is how we spend our days is how we spend our lives. And I didn't want to be, you know, I didn't want to be like meh about my life. I wanted to be in love. I wanted to. So anyway,
I love the answer, Chiara. Let me jump in here really quick because I want to emphasize on something. I want to get your take on it. So passion, I love that, right? And I equal passion to some degree to purpose in life, to a mission, to a why. And that's how I felt most of my life, like you, until a few years back, I took control of that and said, you know what? Let's actually dig in and see what is my purpose, my true passion, my mission in life. And when I did that is that when everything changed, and it sounds like that was pretty much the changing point or the turning point for you, to be like, wow, you know what? I can live my life the way I want to, not what like someone else has told me to. And I love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. So I cut you off there. You're going to continue on to another point. So please go ahead.
Well, I saw these people. I was exploring, what do I do with my life? What do I want to do? It's a very hard question to answer. Most of us are still answering, what do we want to do with our lives? And I saw these people online on Instagram living out of vans, like you mentioned. And these people called digital nomads. I had never heard of it. And I was obsessed with the idea. I would come home from work and I would disappear into this world. I would watch documentaries on travel and YouTube channels and listen to podcasts. It became this whole portal into this other way of life. And I thought, well, I'm sure I could find remote work. I mean, I could freelance, you know, I feel like if other people could figure it out, I could probably figure it out. Like, I kind of have this, like, it can't be harder than other things I've done, can it? Like, I learned to drive a car. That's like a crazy thing to learn, right? I can figure out this other thing. And I found freelancing work online. And then I got rid of my apartment and left and bought a one-way ticket to Mexico. And I had absolutely no plan of where I would go or how long I would be there or what. I had no plan.
So, okay, let me ask you this then. So how did the passion, that purpose you discovered in that, you know, yearly event you attended, how did that tie into the nomad traveling?
I am just drawn to travel. I think a lot of us are, and we don't know why, and we can't explain it to people who don't feel it as well. But you, like, look out the window and you see a plane in the sky and you think, gosh, where's it going? What are those people doing? What adventure are they on? It's just a pool. And that's what I felt. I couldn't explain it back then. I had never traveled abroad, really. I didn't have experience doing that. So I didn't have a good reason to do it, but you don't need a good reason to try something.
No, absolutely. And I do remember you talking about, you know, chasing positivity and change through travel. So let's dive into that a bit, because I feel like that's such an important topic, not just for travel, but for humanity right now, is we're in such a negativity bias, let's say, in a negativity state, that it's very hard for us to actually look for positivity and find it. So let's talk a bit about how you've been, let's call, chasing it through travel.
Oh, it's actually, whenever you start traveling, it's quite the opposite of the chasing positivity, I think. I think at first there's this high whenever you're abroad, you're this place you dreamed of being, and it's really exciting and wonderful. But then after a while, you realize that, I don't know, you're quite alone with yourself. And I think that a lot of people, I've interviewed a lot of digital nomads for my book, and a lot of people experienced a high and then kind of a crashing low of, gosh, everything I was running away from. A lot of it is still with us. You could say, I hate my job, so I need to leave my job behind and then I'll be happy. But whenever you're alone on an island with yourself for long enough, you might realize, I was also upset. I'm upset that I chose the wrong career. And I'm upset that I, you know, let my boss treat me badly for so long. There's actually a lot of that is within us that we attach to external factors that we think we can, like, leave behind at the airport. So you don't just arrive and, like, you know, you, like, land in the airport and get your passport stamped and then you're living this positive experience. It's a lot of highs and lows.
Yeah, I love that you touched on the point. It almost sounds like at the beginning for some of us, it can be as an escape from reality, right? And I've seen it in my life. In fact, I've been working with one of my coaches and mentors and therapists on using food, you know, sex, gambling, gaming, Netflix as a way to escape from reality. And a lot of us are caught doing that. And travel is a great example because I recall in my younger years, I would have, you know, this 1 year vacation, once a year vacation where I would go down south from Canada to, let's say, Dominican Republic, Jamaica, whatever. And I would look forward to that for like the entire year. That was like my highlight. Mm-hmm. Like I would work hard and I would look forward to that to escape reality, to go there for a week and just, you know, enjoy doing nothing for a week. Right. And then, you know, thinking back, I'm like, wow, that's a lot of escaping. And you hit the nail on the head when you explained that, you know, as you feeling the high and then you feel the low almost right after. So how did you find the balance?
I had to address the real issues that were making me upset. My job wasn't the biggest problem in my life. I thought it was. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I didn't have fun. I was the problem. And I went to Mexico and I remember sitting in this hostel and I was surrounded by people going places, doing things, having fun. And I just sat there all day on my computer working, doing my freelance work. People would say, do you want to come swimming? No, thanks. We're going to go to the ruins. No, no, thanks. And I was the exact same person that I was. So for me, I had to really reckon with what parts of me are not sitting right with me. And I have to handle them myself. I can't blame them on other things or I'm going to be stuck with this for the rest of my life.
Beautiful. So it sounds like you had that awakening moment that a lot of us still struggle to find. And I look back to mine, very similar to yours, like realizing, wait a second, like it's not about the job. It's not about the partner. It's not about the friends. It's not about anything but yourself. And when you realize it, I wouldn't say you're the reason behind the problem, but you're the solution to any problem you have.
Oh, I love that.
Right? And it sounds like that's what you discovered. So how long did it take you to like for that to actually click, right? Because you're doing your freelance work, passing out all these awesome opportunities. What was like the line in the sand that you drew and said, you know what? No, this is not how it should be.
These two Argentinian guys invited me out snorkeling with them at night. It was like a kind of a sunset snorkel. And I thought, well...
Hey, it's Constantine here. And I want to take a brief moment to truly thank you for being a part of this incredible journey of transformation. You are the reason we are creating this content. I see you and I appreciate you. Your support truly means the world to me. I want to ask you for a small favor. I'd love for you to join our mission by hitting like, subscribe, or leaving a thoughtful comment or review. Your engagement helps others discover these insights, and together we can continue to unlock the power of authenticity and personal transformation. And if you want to reach out directly to me, send me an email at constantine@unleashthyself.com. I value any and all feedback. Thank you for being a part of this movement. Now, back to the episode.
I should get ahead on work tomorrow. So I said no, and I stayed in. And an hour later, they came back, and they were buzzing. They were on cloud nine, and they said all this bioluminescent sea life came out. That's like glowing, like fish. And I was like, oh, wow, that sounds amazing. I didn't really know what it was. And then I did a quick Google image search, and I was devastated. I thought, you caught up on emails? Instead of saying yes to this experience. And that for me, it was like kind of hitting a brick wall. I thought, I am the exact same person that I was a month ago. And I'm saying no to even more wonderful experiences. It was hard. It took me a very long time to kind of cope with that. And I was kind of reminded, my mom has always said that you have to learn the lessons. The same lesson in life will repeat itself until you learn from what you need to from it. And that was, I wish I had learned that moment. It took me many more encounters.
You know what? It's funny. I mean, that's a beautiful lesson. And I've seen it in my life over and over again and in the life of many people around me. And it comes down to the fact that sometimes, you know, I might tell you an amazing lesson. You may not be in the right space to receive it, or I may not say it the correct way, or I may not show it to you the correct way. So then let's call it the universe, God, whatever we believe in, is going to keep giving it to you in different ways until it finally clicks in, or until the seed germinated enough and it's, you know, big enough of a plant so you can actually receive the lesson. And it's beautiful to see, you know, examples in life all the time around us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can look around. I think we can all see them everywhere in every aspect of our life, our marriage, our work, our health. It's so funny.
100%. So you had that moment that day Was it like an overnight change for you, or was it still like gradual, trying to fight that old you as the new you emerged?
Oh, it was not an overnight change. I was afraid. I was living in a space of fear that I'm going to lose my income. I need to work hard to make more money. I need to work hard to, you know, this feeling that hard work is always the answer. Mm-hmm. It's a very, maybe North American, it's a very capitalist ideal that the harder you work, the better your life will be. And the more I struggled, the more I kept working. I kept thinking that it must be the solution. And it wasn't. It took me a long time to realize that work was a big part of my problem and not my job, you know, work, air quotes, in terms of like the job I used to have, but the way I treated work is the most like important part of my life, hands down, no matter what. Like even on like my birthday and Christmas, I'm still there like checking emails and thinking, well, this matters more than being in the moment. And it always mattered more. Like the potential to be productive always mattered more than being in the moment. And that took years to fix.
Yeah. And that's something that I can 100% resonate with. And I can imagine other people can as well, especially those stuck in the corporate world, the professional world, anywhere where the capitalist way of going shows up. Because, yeah, we have been trained that work, school, whatever it is more important than yourself. And the way I saw it in my life is that our parents knew the same thing, right? Our teachers knew the same thing. Anyone in our life pretty much knew the same model, which meant that everything that we were shown and taught growing up was that idea. So why would we challenge it? Why would we not want to go down that path and be the same and strive for more and do better and do better at work, right? And climb that corporate ladder, so to speak. So totally understandable. Took you years. Now, how would you say now, looking back, how is your life different today now that you've faced that music, had that battle, won the battle, and now you're enjoying life?
Something that made a big difference was being a lot more productive. I'm radically more productive now than I used to be because I used to value the feeling of busyness. And now I don't. I value checking something specific off my list. You know, this manifests in small ways day to day, not, you know, a few years ago, I would have written work on article today as my to-do. And then I would spend all day writing however much I wrote. But now I write, like today I woke up and I wrote, write 1,000 words for this article. Like it gets very specific. And then I know whenever I'm done, I have a very clear idea of whatever I'm done for today. And I'm also much more engaged with where I'm at. I know it sounds ridiculous to, you know, buy one-way ticket to Mexico and then struggle to enjoy being in Mexico. But now, especially now that I have my husband, he is like the most in the moment person I've ever met. He has a complete gift for mindfulness. And being able to close the computer and walk outside in the afternoon and being away from it all. It took years, but it was really, really worth pursuing that kind of relentlessly.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. So many people don't have the opportunity to travel or be a nomad like you are. I'm curious if you were to take whatever you know now and then, you know, go back 10 years ago and say you cannot choose the path of a nomad, but you can apply the lessons in your current life. Do you see ways in which those can be applied to someone that doesn't get to travel like you do or doesn't get to be a nomad and just has to, you know, work 9-to-5 for now, have a family and go from there?
That's a beautiful question. I think that there's so much that you can apply. The biggest is making your surroundings positively impact you. It's easy for me. I move every month to a new location and it's always new and stimulating. But at home, I can remember, I mean, looking around and seeing things that made me feel bad subconsciously. Books on the bookshelf that I bought and I'm never going to finish. A pair of running shoes. I am not going to actually run the way I thought I would. You know, these little things in your environment make you feel bad. And being in this position where I ruthlessly edit my environment constantly, I'm very aware whenever something makes me feel. And if it makes me feel negatively, I look at why and I try to eliminate that.
I love that. The environment is such a huge piece for most of our lives. And we usually don't do enough of an inventory. And if we do an inventory, we don't do the cleanup, the spring cleanup that we need to do. And it sounds like being a nomad allows you to actually do that cleanup, not even by choice, right? Because the lifestyle is forcing it upon you. And I'm talking about cleaning up relationships, cleaning up place, right? Cleaning up material things, which is amazing. So let me ask you this. When it comes to relationships, right? Like people, what I've seen in my life and what I've seen in the life of others is that that's the one area that most people don't do enough cleanup in because they're part of the environment, right? Which means that the people you surround yourself with are going to have an effect on your thoughts and beliefs, which then leads you down to your feelings, your actions, and what you have. So if the people you're around with are full of negativity, like you just mentioned, right? Or if the people around you are full of pessimism or whatever else that's not conducive to how you feel about the world or about yourself, it's going to bring you down. Yeah. Now you have the gift of being able to move around, which means you get to say, you know what, that person I'm not going to be friends with anymore because I'm leaving. I don't have to care about this. Or that person, you know what, I want to stay in touch, even though they might be away. So I'm curious how relationships have been for you because of the lifestyle you have.
Relationships take more work. So I think it's really easy to know whether or not it's worthwhile to you. Whenever you have to send a text, schedule a FaceTime call, it's never just, hey, let's grab a beer. And it's not casual. It's not, you know, it's always, it's intention. It takes intention. And thankfully that makes us question, oh, how does this person make me feel? How much do we have in common anymore? And do we benefit each other's lives? And every once in a while, whenever I'm around an old friend from a different phase of life or an old colleague, I realize, wow, you had a very bad impact on me. And I couldn't tell at the time, but now that I've been away, it's such a, you know, I'm relieved to not have someone who's kind of always that negative voice over your shoulder.
Yeah, I mean, I know from psychology, which is a subject I'm super passionate with, right? People do bond over trauma. People do bond over many of these things that we realize later on that, wait a second, we were good for each other maybe back then, but not anymore because that's, you know, that's not the old me anymore. So when you change it, they don't. That's when you'll see that this disconnect between, wow, you weren't a good influence in my life and you still can be one because of A, B, and C. So I love that. Mm-hmm. Now, moving around as much as you do, right? I'm assuming you met your husband while traveling, but how do you keep close friendships when you have to move so much?
Something easy in my life is that most of my friends are also remote workers. They understand the lifestyle. That's the biggest kind of catalyst for a lot of friendships is that we get it. Both parties understand what the other one is going through. And for friendships that don't, people who are still at home, and at home is not a bad place. I just want to add that home and normal life are wonderful. And for people who are still in that, I just look for common ground, complaining about the cold and, you know, asking about work and plans and, you know, did you see so-and-so had another baby? You know, you have to stick to the common ground that you share because I know my people in my life don't always want to hear how, you know, my life might sound very exotic and people don't want to hear all the time, you know, I'm off doing this or that. They can't understand or maybe relate. And I think it's the worst thing to have people feel like they don't know anything about you anymore because you have an enormous amount of overlap if you just look for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I can imagine that. And there's a level of jealousy I would imagine there as well. If people are not fulfilled within their life, they don't have the passions within their life. Seeing someone living those passions can, of course, be triggering and can be upsetting.
Sometimes people used to make comments a lot in the beginning where I would come visit someone after, you know, a few months of travel and I would say, oh, what's new with you? And they would say nothing. Oh, my life is boring compared to yours. My like, blah, you know, and they would really like diminish their own lives. And that doesn't sit right with me at all because even if life is going badly, I want to hear, you know, no one's life is inherently more worthy of attention than anyone else's.
Yeah, I love that 100%. And what I like to talk about as well, and I'm not sure if you guys can hear my dogs in the background, but they decide to protect the house. They're in the tree. But anyway, we talked about something very important there, which is that people often compare their life to someone else's life and their opportunities to someone else's opportunities. And I was no different. I was doing the same thing. And what I've come to realize, a good mentor of mine taught me this, is that when you look at other people, it shouldn't be about comparing yourself to their progress or where they are in life, but more for inspiration and possibilities. Meaning I look at you, Kayla, and I'd be like, wow, you're doing that, which means that what's stopping me? Why can't I be doing that? If that's the key part. If I want to be living that last life, what stops me? It's usually our own limitations that stop us from being able to do that.
Yeah, you nailed it. And I find that a lot of people haven't even, if you talk about their ideal lifestyle, a lot of people, I would say maybe most, haven't failed to achieve that. They just haven't tried. They haven't thought that it was possible. And I think that's one of the great gifts of social media is that you see people doing something that you thought was impossible. And then you realize, wait, they did this. Oh, well, I could do it too. And I wish I could get everybody that gift. Well, if they could, I can. probably. And it's okay to say, I think so, maybe, probably, I hope. You don't have to feel this like complete, absolute sense of concrete confidence. I know I didn't whenever I started traveling or started my business or started writing a book. I've never felt more insecure in my life, but I really felt like it's possible for me if I try.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, it sounds like that's what you did back when you started looking up the nomad lifestyle, right? You looked at others for inspiration and for possibilities, like, oh, they can do it. And because of something that pulled you in, that was your passion, your purpose, you're like, okay, well, I can do it too. And that's what I feel a lot of people are stuck because, again, of indoctrination and how we were raised, not because anyone had any bad intention, but because that's how society is and how what people learned is what they knew. So then you learn the same things and you apply them in your life. And then you're like comparing yourself to others and you're like, oh, but you know, Kayla is much younger than me and she has a book already. So I'm not going to start mine because I'm older than, you know, I lost that time, right? Something along those lines. And I've had that a lot in my life. And then when I stopped doing that and I started comparing myself to myself and no one else, and it's when everything shifted. And it sounds like it's very similar for you.
Yeah. And I would also say that I think everyone feels that like little voice of, here's that voice of insecurity. Maybe someone says, well, I'm 40 and someone else got a book deal when I wrote their book whenever they were 30. I wrote my book whenever I was 30. And I thought, oh, maybe I'm too young to have adequate insights. I was very aware. I think everything is a double-edged sword and can make you feel bad if you're feeling kind of preyed on by your negative thoughts.
Well, you hit the nail on the head there, right? Negative thoughts. And what's a negative thought for you might not be for me and vice versa, right? So people have to understand that negativity and positivity is just a spectrum. And, you know, my spectrum may look different than yours, or at least the scales on it, I should say. And you have the power to change thoughts and your beliefs. And that's what I did realize for most of my life. And of course, environment influences our thoughts and beliefs, but we can change the environment too, to some degree, right? Or we can at least minimize the impact it has on us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. I love that. Okay, so let's talk a bit about going back to purpose a bit and passion. And, you know, you've discovered this desire to travel. Do you see this as something you'll do for the rest of your life? Or are you in a space now where you're thinking maybe with your partner, hey, maybe we need to find a home base and set some roots, build a family, whatever the case might be?
Not feeling it now. No, it's hard to say because I don't see myself living in the U.S. again. So removing that image I had of what it means to, let's say, be 30, you know, a 30-year-old in the U.S. growing up, we all that image. And whenever I know, well, I'm not in the U.S., I'm not going to have that. I have no image that replaces it. And yeah, I'm not sure. We talk about maybe having kids, maybe not, maybe settling somewhere sunny along the Mediterranean, maybe not. Right now, we are planning 3 months into the future, and that is far into the future for us.
Yeah, I mean, definition of living in the moment, right? I love it. I love it. It's something that many of us strive for, and it's not something that comes easily or naturally to us. So we mentioned your book a couple of times already. Let's actually dive into it for a second. Can you tell us what's about and why you wrote it?
It's about how to be a digital nomad, but it's not just a how-to guide. It was for readers. I want it to be it hasn't been released yet. So I hope whenever it's released, it will be a way into this lifestyle where you feel like you already have friends. You feel like people already told you all the secrets. Whenever you're doing something new, I feel like you like fumble around and you think, gosh, everybody knows what I'm doing wrong. I feel like I know what so many of those fumbles will be and I'm preparing people for them. And it's just a very practical guide on how to still grow your career while traveling, and lots of stories from other nomads across the decade. I found the first digital nomad. His name's Stephen K. Roberts. He started traveling in 1983 with the first like really portable computer. And he was kind enough to speak to me about his experience. And just kind of painting the picture of the movement. This is not new and it's kind of still just getting started because the movement's exploding. So many people are interested. And I think it's just wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I know from travel, and I've traveled quite a bit, both for work and pleasure. So I had, you know, good opportunity and good favors for that. And what you realized and what they helped me understand as someone that was born in Eastern Europe, where there was a lot of biases and prejudices, like all parts of the world, right? It's not no different than any other parts of the world. But really, having to move to Canada and then traveling around Europe, around South America, around North America, has allowed me to see, wow, look at all these beautiful cultures, how they live. You get to understand them and realize that no one is that different from each other, right? It doesn't matter if you're white or black or brown or yellow or blue, you're all the same at the end of it. It's just everyone wants to have a good life. Everyone wants to have an impact in the world for the most part. And that's it. And that's what I believe travel does for a lot of people. It gives you different perspectives that, unfortunately, your small world, wherever you are, does not allow you to have. Now, the internet has shifted a bit, but sometimes it can still be going the wrong way.
Yeah, there's nothing fun, I think, more fun, I don't know, enjoyable, charming than whenever you're in a new country and you look and you see something that you've seen 1,000 times. You see like a little kid arguing at the grocery store for candy. Or I left. We're in Croatia here. There's a lot of stray cats. And everywhere we go, there's like a cat napping in the sun. And it feels, life feels so, I don't know, so simple and beautiful. And I love that about traveling.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And yeah, that's beautiful. So what's your favorite story that you had the chance to either experience yourself or someone you interviewed for your book shared with you?
I'd love to tell the story of Stephen Roberts, who I mentioned before, the first digital nomad. Not his whole story, of course, but he shared something beautiful with me that he was, before he was nomadic, he was a freelance writer. He wrote about technology, and he said that he was asking the question, is losing the spark for life just an inevitable part of growing up, or can you chase it? And he decided that he wanted to build a life entirely out of passions. And he actually made a list of his passions and picked two of the primary themes, which was distance cycling and computer technology. And then he built this high-tech bicycle and took it on the road and biked around the U.S. with a tent and this computer. And he would send his stories. There was no Wi-Fi or internet. So he would send his stories using an acoustic coupler and a payphone. It's like a device that hooks up to the computer. And then it's suction cups that go on the payphone receiver and like sends articles, I think, to a fax machine. And he just has a really beautiful quote from his own writing that is, you can't just dabble in passion. It's all or nothing.
I love that. I love it so much. That's such a great example where, you know, there's a will, there's a way, yeah. Right? You want to do something, you want to have a better life, then it's your choice at the end of the day. You have the power to make it happen, or you have the power to sit back and just be like, hey, I let life happen to me as opposed to for me. So I love that so, so much. I love that story and that example you gave. And if we look back at the passions and purpose we talked about, right? That's how I uncover my purpose, by looking at my passions. Like, what am I passionate about? What gets me up in the morning? And it's like, it doesn't matter if it's a Monday or a Sunday, I still have a smile on my face and I still look forward to proceeding with my day. And that's how you turn passions into purpose, because you realize, well, I can do more of those passions and I can have a life worth living, and I can have a life that sustains me and a life where I have an impact. Wow, that's powerful.
It's such a powerful realization. It changes everything.
Yeah. So I'm wondering with him specifically, so it's been 40 years for him. And I know that because I was born in 83. So to imagine that he started that all the way back then when technology was nothing like today, none of it. I wonder, is he still a nomad to this day?
He is living on a boat. It's docked. So he's not sailing around the world, but he's currently living on a boat in Washington State in the U.S. And he's building a mobile technology lab that he and his cat are going to drive around in.
That's awesome, right? So that's taking, you know, digital nomadism to another level, right?
Yeah.
Well, you can be a digital nomad and be on a boat and then just go to different places every so often. So yeah. I know people that do that. That's pretty cool.
He's really quite a profound person. And he biked around the U.S. for 10 years. And then his bike, his mom, this is all in the book. So I know he wouldn't mind me sharing it because he approved me publishing it. But he said that his mom, whenever she found out he was going to bike around and live out of a tent, she said, are you just going to be a bum your whole life? And now his bike, there's a high-tech bicycle. It lives in the Computer Science and Technology Museum. And I just think it's so funny, like that juxtaposition. Like if people react negatively in your life to you making big changes or becoming nomadic or doing anything, that is the norm. I think people just don't know what to do with it whenever you color too far outside the line.
I love it. And that's also, I would say, a sign that probably you should be doing the thing that you are scared of or what others are scared for you of. Now, it doesn't mean to be reckless and to not follow due diligence to some degree, but it means to step outside the box, like you said, and draw your own box. If you even want to draw a box, we just use the world as an oyster. That's so beautiful. It's so, so beautiful. And what I like about the example we're using him or here with him and what you're sharing is that by him, let's call it ignoring the normal back then, because this was like a big taboo, I would imagine. I mean, beyond being. And going and doing this, what happened? I mean, he got to live his passions and purpose, but here's the big but for me. He gave permission to others to be able to do the same thing.
Wonderful.
We essentially become the person that we should be, or we want to be, or we know inside of us that we want to be. By doing so, we're giving permission to all others around us to be themselves as well. And that's what I saw in my life. When I began my transformation journey, when I began to follow my passions and execute my purpose, not everyone was like, oh shit, if Constantine is doing it, I'm going to do it too. But a lot of people were like, wow, you almost gave me permission, or you gave me permission to go chase my own dreams, to go fight my own depression, to go do whatever the case might be. And it sounds like that's his example. And of course, yours right now with the book and everything else.
Yeah, that's profound. It's a profound observation. And I find that in the beginning, maybe you found this as well. Whenever you start to make a big change, a lot of people naturally want to push back against it. But I have found that it doesn't take long before those same people are telling you, do it now. You're doing a great thing. Don't let life pass you by. And that's what Stephen said as well. He said everywhere he went, people said, you are doing the right thing. I wish I had done this. If I was young, if I could do life again. He said he was nonstop. There's this nonstop kind of cosmic reinforcement that he was doing the right thing with his life. And I felt it too. And I had to push back in my life from people. I mean, my immediate family was very supportive, but there were people who thought, oh, you're going to regret this. This is weird. You're throwing away your career. Isn't this what you want? Did you go to college to have a good job and now you're throwing it away? There was pushback. Oh, it's dangerous. Something bad's going to happen. It's like you're looking for trouble. I mean, there were a lot of comments, and those same people came back and said, I wish I could do this too. It did not take that long before people were kind of, once they see it's possible, people are, their mind is changed.
Yeah, I'll give you my take on that. That's such a beautiful observation too. That's definitely a part of it, that once they see it's possible. And I would take it to another level as well, saying that by going on this path, the one you did, or like I did in my life, what tends to happen is your passion now comes out from you. Like, it's impossible to hide it. You're not miserable anymore. You're living the dream, so to speak, which means that other people can feel it. They don't necessarily see it with the naked eye, but they can feel it emotionally, spiritually. There's a connection there. And that's what I found is when I became truly aligned with my purpose and my passion, and my vulnerability came out and my authenticity came out as a result of that, then the connection with people exploded, which meant that it allowed people that were doubters before or negative before to now have a shift. And like, to your point, be like, hey, you know what? I wish I could do what you're doing, or, you know, I'm inspired by what you're doing and I'm going to pursue my own purpose and passion in life.
I think that's the biggest gift, because no one should be mimicking anyone else's path. I would never say that travel is the best choice for everyone. It's not an enlightened path. It's not better than anything. If you want to do it, I think that you should, but I don't think that everyone should. And I hope that that's something that people feel.
Yeah, if there's one thing that anyone listening to this is taking out from this episode, is the idea that it's not that travel is the answer or podcasting is the answer, or any of this is the answer. The answer is that idea in my mind and my heart is that you find whatever it is you're passionate, tie it to a purpose, find whatever the purpose is, your why, and then go do that. If it's travel, perfect. If it's not travel, I'm sure it can be painting, it can be helping people as a therapist, or maybe you can be the construction worker because you want to build amazing, beautiful roads or buildings, right? At the end of the day, it doesn't matter. You have to find what is yours, as opposed to always trying to execute on someone else's dream, vision, passion, purpose, which is what, again, all of us are kind of raised to be doing.
Yes. Yeah.
No, I love that so, so much. Kayla, it's been such a beautiful conversation so far. So I'm curious, what's been your biggest lesson on this journey so far?
Oh, wow. That's a hard question.
First thing that comes up.
I'm afraid I already hit on it. I don't want to be repetitive. I guess the solution to a lot of my problems is within.
Yes. 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 How does your partner feel about that?
That's interesting. My partner and I are very different. I'm someone who, I'm thinking of a good metaphor. If I was like a ship, I'm like naturally swaying from side to side. I naturally am imbalanced. I get overenthusiastic. I can, and it's just kind of my nature. I need to work really hard to find balance. And my partner is someone who is naturally so well balanced. So, it's very different. We complement each other well. I run away with things, and he, comes along. It doesn't, they're not opposing forces. They kind of sound opposing, but I don't know if I'm making any good points here, but.
No, it's balancing. It's all about balance. You hit on something there, right? You did mention you need to work hard at balancing things. And it's funny that you mentioned that. And I'll tell you why, because as I'm listening to you, as I'm watching your body language, you talked about one of your biggest lessons being the fact that you realize you don't want to work so hard to find success, to find whatever. Yet you're working very hard to find balance in life. And then that doesn't show up as a result of it. I'm wondering if there's a connection that it just came up, so I figured I'd share it with you.
Yeah, I have an intensity. I'm just, I don't know. I'm not excited by things unless they're kind of over the top. And I guess a good example, for example, okay, I turned 30 last year, and I thought a habit I wanted to implement was, this isn't a very like spiritual or profound, I wanted to wear sunscreen on my face every day, just like a little thing of self-care. And I thought today, my 30th birthday, I thought, I'm going to wear sunscreen every day until I turn 40. Like, it couldn't have been a month, a week, a year of, you know, a year of being disciplined. It was a decade. That's all I could think, was checking the whole decade off the box perfectly. And one of my mottos is, anything worth doing is worth overdoing. So it kind of oozes out of even the smallest aspects of life.
It's a beautiful lesson in there too, right? Because you can see how the personal development, self-improvement, whatever you want to call it, that improvement that we all go through by choice or otherwise, it has many layers to it. Just because you overcome so many challenges doesn't mean you're not still faced with challenges to overcome. Mm. And I think that's pretty much the lesson of life, right? It's like we shouldn't be running away from challenges. We should be embracing them because they lead to our growth.
Yeah, I've never felt, I guess, more aware of my, I don't know, let's say shortcomings. It sounds negative, but it's not, because it's a part of the human experience. I don't feel like I've ever been more aware than I am now, and more kind of excited to fill holes and learn. Right now, I'm working on reading one personal development book a week, and I'm not implementing everything because it would be, you know, I couldn't, but I'm getting books about waking up at 5 a.m. and thinking, oh, I didn't know this about sleep, and reading books about like negative thoughts and how our brains work and psychology. And I am like feverishly kind of, I don't know, filling in these like weak points in myself. And it feels exciting, instead of, I don't know, maybe it can be positive. The more you would kind of feel that happen, the more you want it to happen more, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%, 100%. And two things came up for me there to share with you and the audience. One is the idea that by consuming content that's not necessarily yours, you're planting seeds. Mm-hmm. And some of those will germinate because the right conditions are there, and some of them will not, which is great. Because at the end of the day, the second point I was going to make is that one thing I heard, I learned the hard way, is that it's okay to take the things that resonate with you, the things that make sense to you, and toss out the rest. So like you said, you can't implement everything. You cannot agree with everything at a fundamental level. So it's okay to disagree with someone on certain aspects and still respect them, to say, you know what, you're right about these, or at least these make sense. And that's what I feel society nowadays is going on the extreme, where like if someone does something wrong, they're crucified and nothing good that they've done in their life matters anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And that means that we're missing our lessons that we could take. Now, I'm not saying, you know, if we take an extreme example like Hitler, right? Terrible human being on all levels, right? Are there any positives you can take from his story? I mean, of course, we're not living in the time right now, so we can learn from it. We can still bring positive things in our life while still condemning all the negativity. Nothing he did was positive, right? But we can learn from it, which is a positive thing in itself, because we learned.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of lack of balance. I hope that it doesn't, I don't know. I hope that the kind of cancel culture settles and people learn to, I don't know, let people redeem themselves. It's not always appropriate, but I think sometimes it's wonderful to see people who made big mistakes and move on and grow.
We've all made them. Now, of course, if you're a pedophile or something,
yeah,
a little bit about that, then of course, you know, there's different levels for everything. There's, you know, there's no black and white. There's always a spectrum to go on. But if you said something mean to someone in one life and you called them a word, and you didn't realize because you're ignorant at the time and, you know, your society built you the way you are, you can take responsibility for it and say, you know what, I've learned from my lessons and I can improve. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you, right? Like we can take a shift, and it's shifting to some degree. But that goes back to the negativity bias we talked about. And, you know, you mentioned psychology books. I'm super passionate about psychology, neuropsychology specifically. I'm certified in what's called neuroencoding, which is all about our nervous system and neuropsychology. And really, the negativity bias is what drives every human being because of what happened in our past, meaning in our pretty much in our entire human history, minus the last 50, 60 years, which is the need to be safe, the need to be to stay alive in a world that's full of dangers. So negativity had to make its way the fastest to your brain. The negative memories had to be at the forefront so they can come back and remind you, you don't put your hand on the fire after you try it the first time. Or, you know, there's a cat in the jungle, you need to be aware. And if we realize that we're just working with an, let's call it more ancient system in a modern world, then we have the power to adjust. We can change it fully, but we can adjust. And that's what you've been doing by the sounds of it. And that's what we talked about, chasing positivity at the beginning.
I love that. I didn't know that about negativity. I at least everything you said resonated really beautifully. And I'm reading a book now on negative thoughts, and I just started, but I'm already amazed to become aware of how prominent they are. And it's kind of terrifying, but.
And it's something beautiful there, right? Because you didn't know about this and it resonates. Here's the beauty of it, right? Some people will be like, take that to the bank and be like, I believe this person 100%. But the beauty is you have the internet, you have ChatGPT, you have AI. Go ask it this question. Go find the peer review research and you'll be like, oh yeah, that person is right. Now, it doesn't mean that everything I say is right. It's right based on the information I have. My information might be wrong or might be outdated, right? Because we're making progress all the time. But if we think, I listened to a podcast last night. I forgot the name of it, but essentially was this neuropsychologist talking about how when she got her PhD, they didn't realize or they didn't know that the brain can actually change once you're an adult, meaning neuroplasticity, if you're familiar with it, is the idea that your thoughts, your beliefs are not set in stone. Because you see, we believed that once you grew up, that's it. That's your beliefs. That's your thoughts. You can never change that. Now, science is proving it that neuroplasticity is a thing, which means that you have the power to change thoughts, beliefs, do hard things, change your habits, change everything in your life that you want. And I mean, you're proving it. You're a living proof of it, right? And so are many other people. That's why science finally caught up to it.
Wow.
Anyway.
Beautiful. I've never heard of neuroplasticity.
Yeah, look into it. I mean, I'm super excited about this stuff. That's why it sometimes comes out. I want to come back to the digital nomad for a second. You've been to many countries. We haven't even talked about them yet. However, I would like you to pick for me your favorite country and why.
Guatemala is my favorite country. And I met my husband there, but so slight bias, but yeah. It has really rugged beauty. It's so beautiful. And everywhere is beautiful, but there's a specific beauty to Guatemala. I don't know how to say it. And it's almost embarrassing because I should have a better answer. I'm a professional writer and I can't think of any way to describe. It's just really, I don't know, a profound beauty.
Describing it would be the science, and knowing it is like that inner knowing that you can't explain. So I'll accept that. I mean, that's beautiful, right? You know it's a bad place for you and you have your reasons. That's good enough for me. Now, on the flip side, do you have countries you know you wouldn't go back to except the USA, as you mentioned?
Yeah. Well, I visit the US, but I don't see myself living there. Mm-hmm. But I will always visit. I go home once a year. Countries I won't go back to. I just had a bad experience somewhere. It's hard to say. I hate to say anything negative without it being really well-founded. I spent 2 days in... I don't even want to say. I spent 2 days in a country a few months ago, and I thought, wow, this is the most depressing place I've ever seen, but I don't want to say its name because I don't know it well. It was a first impression. I would tell you afterwards. I would... I don't like to say anything bad unless I can really back it up with a solid thesis.
You know what? That's actually a beautiful lesson for me and for everyone listening as well, is that just because we had a bad experience, we can't generalize an entire location, population, piece of the world just because of one experience that we deem to be harsh, right? And that's what I've realized in life, because it's so easy for us to jump to judgment. And, you know, when I asked that question, I realized after I was asking a judgmental question, I'm like, oh, what did you not like? Or what kind of things you not like? And it's like, okay, well, you have to be judgmental to be able to answer that.
It's interesting. It's a very interesting conversation if you spend a lot of time somewhere. Like sometimes people will have like lived in a country and they'll tell you it was terrible and here's 20 reasons. And they really dig into the culture and the government and the systems. And that's, you know, quite fascinating. It feels like an insight into a very different way of life. But
it does. But then you look at people that live in poverty, the people that live all their life in poverty in a country that oppressed them. And yet the happiest people you'll ever meet.
Yeah. Guatemala, the kids were so happy. I've never seen happier kids in my life.
Yeah, right. Which means, which tells you that it's all up to you. Do you want to live in the negativity or do you want to live in the positivity? Because everywhere in the world, it doesn't matter. I mean, I live in Canada, which is supposed to be an amazing country. I can give you a list of 20 negative things right now, and we can spend an entire afternoon talking about everything that's bad about Canada. Or we can put that energy into positivity and have a much more beautiful conversation with a smile on our face and leaving the conversation at the end, you know, feeling refreshed as opposed to feeling down and upset and then unproductive for a week.
Absolutely. Yeah.
No, I love that. Okay, Kayla, it's been such a beautiful conversation so far. So before I let you go, anything else you'd like to add, anything that we haven't talked about that you'd like to draw attention to?
I would love to encourage anyone listening to whatever your dream is, whatever, I call it the plan A, like what would you do if you couldn't fail? That's something from Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Workweek. That's an exercise that he has. So that wasn't my idea, but think about it and ask yourself if you've tried and failed, because if you haven't failed, then that's still waiting. That could still be for you. And I don't know. I like to encourage everyone to believe in the plan A because you have no idea if it's possible.
And if you don't have a plan A, if you don't know what it really is, there are many ways to uncover it. Yeah. It took me a while to uncover mine. Now I help people uncover their plan A, their plan B, their purpose. And it's such a rewarding experience for me and for them, especially because once they find it, like you said, like once they realize, oh, this is what's really powerful. Okay, I'm going to go do this now and I can bring more of it in my life. And at least in my experience in helping dozens and dozens of people find their purpose and execute it, it's not about literally flipping the script overnight and going from A to B overnight. It's how you do an inventory and say, okay, how much does it show up in my life? And once you realize how much it shows up, it's like, okay, how can I improve it? Sometimes you can do a drastic improvement like you're just up and go, right? But sometimes you have to take it more gradual because you might have a family, you might have children, you might have commitments that you can't just walk away from. So it's how can you bring your purpose into those commitments? How can you bring your purpose into your job until you find the career you want or build the career you want? So that super resonates with what you're talking about in your life so far.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a beautiful message.
Yeah, for sure, Kayla. I can't thank you enough. It's been such a pleasure to chat with you. I'll have your links and your book information in the comments as well. But yeah, that's pretty much it from us. Thank you so much, Kayla. Thank you to the audience. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us on this exploration of personal transformation. Your presence and engagement are at the heart of what we do, and I sincerely appreciate you, your time, and thirst for knowledge, inspiration, and empowerment. Please consider showing your support by hitting like, subscribe, leaving a comment, or writing a review. Your engagement not only fuels our mission, but also helps others discover these insights. For more daily guidance on personal transformation across the mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical realms, be sure to visit our website at unleashthyself.com. You can also find us on Instagram at unleashthyselftoday, TikTok and YouTube at unleashthyself, and there we post daily content designed to inspire and empower you on your journey. If you have any specific thoughts, questions, or feedback, I truly value your input. Or if you'd like to have a conversation with me or work with me, please feel free to email me directly at constantine@unleashthyself.com. I would love to hear from you. Together, we're building a community united in authenticity and purpose. Once again, thank you for being a part of this movement. Until next time, continue to embrace your true self and live a life on purpose, with purpose. See you in the next episode.